Comos to the extent possible.
Were they sent by email?
Yes. Bruce sent them out.
Okay. Got it.
Hello.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Arthur, you should mute yourself so I could give the share. All right. These are sources I think we've looked at before. It takes on, it's hard to know if this year this will be more halacha l'maisa or less halacha l'maisa. But the idea behind the shir is not halacha l'maisa, it's much more theoretical, and it's as follows. We often ask ourselves, you know, how halacha develops over time. You know, it seems like in certain areas of halacha that where we are now is not where we once were. On the one hand, as from Jews, you know, we don't think that we just change halacha as and when necessary. On the other hand, you look at a situation, you go, I don't know exactly how it happened, but it's different now than it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago. And the development of the sin, how halacha doesn't change, but circumstances change, and as circumstances change, you know, the halacha, again, I don't want to use the word changes, the halacha unfolds or develops in a way where after time, you're not in the same place that you were, but not because anybody sat down and changed halacha. Somebody found it in a way that it had not been applied before. Okay, that's the background. So the goal is to look at kind of the development of the sale of chametz, something that now is, you know, is completely common for us, and see how we got from a time where nobody sold chametz to a time where almost everybody sells chametz without. Okay, clear what we're trying to do? I can see you. Somebody nod. Okay, good. Let's start with the first source on the sheet. If you're not looking at it, it's a Mishnah in Psachim, Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, that says as follows. Kol sha'ah shemutar la'achol, so long as it's permitted for one to eat chametz, then obviously, ma'achil lebehema lechayav la'ofo. Okay, you can obviously then, you know, feed it to your animals, to your livestock, to your pets. U'mocher lenachri, and you can sell it to a Gentile. I'll just fit. That's what we need. Those are the two main words. U'mocher lenachri. But we'll just finish the Mishnah. U'mutar b'hana'ato, and you're permitted to get benefit from the chametz. However, avar zmano, once the time for eating chametz has passed, then asur b'hana'ato, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from the chametz, any pleasure from the chametz. In addition, v'lo yasik bo tanur v'kirayim, you can't even use it to stoke your fire. I mean, you say to yourself, I'm not eating it, I'm just going to, you know, let's say, as happened years ago when I lived in North America, you know, Erev Pesach, it's very cold. So you say, you know what, I'll burn my chametz in the afternoon. I'll burn it in my fireplace, so that'll heat up the house. So the answer is that's absolutely prohibited. Once chametz is asur, it's asur ba'achila and ba'hanah. Okay? But let's go back to what we read at the beginning in the source. Whenever you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to sell it to a guy. Right? That's what the Mishnah says. U'mochel anachri. So it looks like we have a source right away for the fact that a person is allowed to sell chametz. This isn't a good, why is this not a good source? How do we do this, Arthur? Can we have class participation? You're muted, Arthur. No one hears you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Now I can. So can people speak or does that mess it up?
Yeah, they can speak. They could just carry on like any other conversation.
Okay. So the question is, again,
everyone comes into the session muted, in the lower left-hand corner, there's a mute, unmute button on the menu bar for the program. It says mute or unmute. So if you click on that, you can speak.
Okay, so the question is, the Mishnah says if you're allowed to eat chametz, you're allowed to sell chametz. Why is that not, you know, the obvious source that allows us to do what we do, which is to sell chametz? Okay, I'll just do this. It'll be harder to have class participation, I see. David, just nod that you know the answer. You're just not saying it. Okay, so the answer is because the Mishnah says, u'mochel anachri, it means in an absolute, genuine sale. Right, so it means Erev Pesach in the morning, the Mishnah says that if you have a store, you own a store, and it's, you know, it's in Ohio, and you have Gentile customers, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you selling chametz to a Gentile so long as the prohibition against eating chametz has not come into effect. So just for, if it's easy to do it with these numbers, if the prohibition on eating chametz comes into effect at noon on Erev Pesach, the Mishnah says, Erev Pesach in the morning, you're allowed to sell chametz to a guy. This is, of course, not a chiddush. Erev Pesach in the morning is no different than a week before Pesach or 2 weeks before Pesach. There's no prohibition. It doesn't, it's not a chiddush for us. It doesn't help us because this is a real sale. When you sell to this guy, he's taking the chametz home and he's going to do what he does with chametz. In fact, it's so obvious that in source number two, the Gemara on this Mishnah, also in Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph in Pesachim, asks as follows, U'mochro v'nachri pshita. Well, of course you could sell it to a guy. If you could eat it, you could sell it. Says the Mishnah now. Says the Gemara now. La'afuke mehai tana detanya. No, it's excluding a particular tana who holds as follows. Beishamai omrim. Lo yimkar adam chemtzolin nachri. Shammai says it's prohibited to sell your chametz to a Gentile. Ela imkein yodea bo sheyichlek kodem Pesach. Unless you know that he's going to eat the chametz before Pesach starts. We'll finish the Mishnah and then ubeisil alomrim, the way we passed in. Kol sha'asha mutar la'echol mutar limkar. So long as you're permitted to eat the chametz, you're permitted to sell it to a guy. Now, what's the theory of Beis Shammai? Beis Shammai says it's prohibited to sell chametz to a Gentile even before Pesach, unless you know that the chametz is going to be destroyed or eaten by this guy. So Rashi, right below at the bottom of number two on the sheet, says as follows, Kodem she'avah Pesach, because Savri, because Beis Shammai hold mitzvah alav leva'aro min ha'olam, it is a commandment to get rid of the chametz physically, v'lo sheyehe kayam. So this is a fascinating idea. According to Beis Shammai, you have responsibility for your chametz. And even if you sell responsibility, this is an. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an enormous chumrah that we don't paskin like, thank God. But Beis Shammai says at some point you are obligated to get rid of your chametz, not just to not own your chametz, but to get rid of it. And so the chiddush of the Mishnah is no. Beis Shammai, it's not true, and you're allowed to outright sell your chametz to a guy, even on Erev Pesach, so long as the Isser Chametz has not kicked in. Okay? So again, in theory, we have a source, a great source, a Mishnah, that allows us to sell Chametz to Gentiles, but the fact of the matter is, it's not really a good source, because this is an outright sale. Okay? The way we should imagine this Mishnah is you own a makolet, and you could leave them, you know, Erev Pesach, you can have the makolet open, and people can come in, and you can make an outright sale to those people so long as it's an outright sale. Okay. So if that's the case, where do we get, what's the source for our, let's say, minhag, whether it's correct or not, what's the source for our sales that, let's face it, are not outright sales. They're absolutely not outright sales. We fully expect to get our stuff back after Pesach. So surprisingly, it's a Tosefta. A Tosefta, again, being from the time of the Mishnah. So it's really, really a good source for this. And in source number three, is someone trying to ask?
Yeah, wasn't it originally a Hefsin Meruba, like for the wine or for the beer?
Okay, we don't need that yet. We're not nearly up to that. Eventually, we'll come to there. What I'm saying is, here, the Mishnah in theory says you could sell, you know, you could sell a bag of, you know, of corn chips. Well, that's not a good example. You could sell a devil dog, not because it's Hefsin Meruba. Just because if it's before Pesach, you could sell chametz to Gentiles. You know, you could sell it if it costs 2 shekel. You could sell it if it costs 200,000 shekel. We haven't gotten yet to any issue of hefsid meruba. For those who don't know, is sometimes Chazal allow things if it will otherwise cost you a lot of money. But we're not up to that yet. We don't need it yet. Now look at source number three. The Tosefta in Psachim tells the following story. This really looks like it's going to be a great support for us. The Tosefta says as follows. Yisrael v'goy shehayu bain b'sfina. Right, sounds like the beginning of a joke, right? The Pope, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and you are on a boat, okay? So a Jew and a Gentile are on a boat. V'chametz b'yad Yisrael. And there's chametz in the hands of the Jew. The point is not to talk about current events, but let's imagine, you know, you're on a boat and you were supposed to get there before Pesach. Okay, you have a lot of chametz with you and you realize you're not going to get there in time for Pesach. So what do you do? So the Tosefta says, Harezem mochro lenochri, if you're on a boat and you have valuable chametz, you can sell it to a Gentile. V'notno b'matana, or you can give it to him in an outright gift. V'chozer v'lokeach mimenu la'achar ha-Pesach. And after Pesach, you can take it back from him. You can buy it back from him. We can give it back to you as a gift. U'bilvad sheyitno lo b'matana gimura. So long as the original transfer to the Gentile was an absolute unconditional transfer. Okay, so this looks great. This is our source. This is a Tosefta that says that if you're on a boat with a Gentile, you can give him or sell him your chametz, even though it's a complete, as we call it in halacha, harama, it's a trick, because you fully intend to get it back after Pesach, right? So this Tosefta, great. Yeah, please.
What about, now you're on a boat, apparently you're delayed. Right? It's not like you expect it to come back before Pesach, right?
Right.
So what happens, can you do the same thing with all the chametz you might still have in your house that you're coming back to?
Okay, so let's get to that. One step at a time. Right now, what we have in the Tosefta is, you know, you're on a cruise ship and, you know, you I don't know, for whatever reason, you have cases and cases of valuable chametz. You're a chametz salesman. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, now you can't get off the boat before Pesach. So the answer is, with respect to the physical chametz that you have with you on the cruise, you can give it to a Gentile, even if the plan is for him to give it back to you after Pesach, so long as he's not obligated to give it back to you after Pesach. Meaning, if after Pesach, you know, he wants to cause you problems, or he just wants to keep your chametz, he can keep it. If it's up to him, if it's an absolute transfer, then the answer is you can do it, and it works for you to not be in violation of owning chametz on Pesach. Okay? So it looks like this ought to be a good source for us, but it's not really. Why not? So I'll tell you. The first is, it's clear in this Tosefta that the whole situation is bidyeved, right? It's not how it's supposed to be. It happens to be that you're on a boat and bad luck, you know, the plan was to be home and you have no alternative than to give it to the guy or to transfer it. So in that situation, the Tosefta allows it. So, you know, that's bad for us because it's clearly only bidyeved. It just happens to be that you're on a boat and you're stuck. And secondly, the sense you get is that the chametz is actually physically transferred to the guy. Right? When you read this Tosefta, the sense you get is your note no b'matana v'chozer v'lokeach means during Pesach, the chametz is not in your you know suite. Obviously, you know, you'd all have suites on the boat. You live on the Lido deck and you know you're in room number 115. During the course of Pesach, there's no chametz in room number 115 on the Lido deck because it's all in the room, you know, of Jack McGuire, who lives in, you know, in room 220 on the Aloha deck. So neither of these work as a precedent for us, A, because it seems like it's a physical transfer of the chametz, and B, it's bidyeved. Maybe the Tosefta wouldn't let you do it. Okay? Nevertheless, the Tosefta seems like some kind of support for the halacha that gets quoted by the Beit Yosef in source number 4. The Beit Yosef obviously grew up to be Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Shulchan Aruch. But now we're talking, if we want to start putting dates on these things. So the Beit Yosef is in the 1500s in Tzfat. And the Beit Yosef quotes the Trumat Hadeshen, who says as follows. B'katuv b'Trumat Hadeshen, Simon Kufchav, Mi sheyesh biyado inyanei chametz, a person who owns chametz objects, v'rotzeh letitam legoy chutz labayit b'matana gemura.
You're frozen.
Yeah, we may have lost his audio. His internet connection is kind of weak.
And he doesn't want to lose all the money. He wants to give it to a Gentile in an outright trance. No, nobody can hear me?
We hear you now. Yeah.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Sorry. We're back. Where did I cut out? Okay, I'll start again with... Okay, so the Beit Yosef in the 1500s, in source number 4, quotes the Trumat HaDeshen, who says as follows, V'katuv b'Trumat HaDeshen Simon Kufchav Mi sheyesh biyado inyanei chametz. A person who owns chametz, like us. And he wants to give it to a Gentile outside of his house in an outright gift. Okay, that sounds like us. Oto goy haYisrael makiro. It's not a real transfer or a real gift because this guy, you know, he's your friend. V'yodeya bo shelo yigabahem hagoy klal. And you know that this Gentile is not going to touch your chametz, right? So on the one hand, legally, it's an outright transfer, but substantively, it's not at all, because you know it's a complete game. He's not going to touch it. Ela yishmerein lo ad la'achar ha-Pesach. He's going to keep it till after Pesach. V'yazor v'yitnein lo. And only after Pesach is he going to give it back. Yira'eh d'shari. Says the Beit Yosef, it appears to me he's hedging a tiny bit, right? This is the last full line in the middle. Yera'ed Dishari, it seems to me that this should be permitted. Rak, however, one condition, Sheyitnein lo b'matana gemura, it has to be an outright gift, Deli shum tanai, without any condition. Or you can sell it to him, a real sale, even if he's not paying full value. Okay, so let me just make this clear what we just saw. We just saw codified by the Beit Yosef that he says, it seems to me that if, as a technical matter, you've given an outright gift to a Gentile, or he's paid some kind of down payment, but as a legal matter, he owns the chametz, it ought to be the case that that gets you out of the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach, even if you know that he's going to give it back to you after Pesach, right? Now we basically distinguish between substance and process. On the process front, you have outright transferred ownership unconditionally to this Gentile. Substantively, it's understood between you that he's going to give it back to you. Doesn't matter. So long as if he wants to, pardon my language, he can screw you, right? So long as if he wants, he could keep it after Pesach. That constitutes a real sale, and that gets you out of the problem of Baal Yireu Baal Yimotzei. Somebody wanted to ask a question? No? Okay. So this looks like a great source. This seems to be exactly what we do. Beis Yosef says, you know, it appears to be okay to do what we do. Why is this not a source? Why is this not what we do? Anybody?
Is this what we do?
It's not what we do.
There are cases where the goy has a...
No, it's not what we do for a simple reason. Anybody?
Because we charge the goy more. He just gives a deposit now.
No. It's the last... No. It's... Look at four. The last two words of the first line.
Was his note
is where we stand. He says, you do it how? Chutz labayit. It means that on Pesach, you have no chametz in your house. What he allows you to do is, you know, you can cheat. You can cheat on the substance, but on the process, on the legal technicalities, right, there's no cheating. And we all know there's no such thing as a sale in which you keep it. And there's no such thing as, you know, telling somebody, happy birthday, I'm giving you my car, except I'm going to keep using it in my driveway. Right? That's not a gift. Everybody with me? So again, we have now a
thing. Wait a minute. What about on Sukkot, where you're giving an esrog to somebody if they don't have one? That's my title almanas ha'ox here.
So forgetting that, okay, we'll use your example just so that you'll feel bad after I do this. Tell a guy on Sukkot, listen, I'm willing to give you my esrog, right? Matan almanas lahachs here. And then he goes to take your esrog, and you go, no, you can't touch it, right? It doesn't work. Here you're saying to a guy, hey, I'm selling you my chametz, and he goes, okay, give it to me. And you go, oh, no, I'm not giving it to you. I'm just selling it to you. It doesn't work that way. So the Beit Yosef says, again, just to see how this develops over time, in the 1500s, the Beit Yosef says, yeah, you want to cheat, you could cheat. But it has qualities of a sale. And the basic technicality of a sale is that physical ownership of the chametz. Transfers from you to him. So that two things happen. One, you don't have chametz sale because he actually took possession of it. Can you still hear me? Just nod if you can.
Yes.
Okay, good.
What you said?
What?
Can you go back a minute what you said? Because you were warbled.
Sure. All I'm saying is, the Beit Yosef allows you to cheat, but so long as all the technical aspects of a sale are fulfilled, which are, there's an unconditional transfer of the merchandise, and there's a physical transfer of the merchandise, so that it's not in your house, And technically speaking, by the letter of the law, it is now under the ownership of the Gentile. That is now allowed, even if, wink, wink, we know that after Pesach is over, he's going to return it to you. Okay? That is absolutely the halacha in the 1500s. But it doesn't help us because we don't physically transfer possession of our chametz. So what we need. Let's just look quickly, verse number 5, at the Shulchan Aruch to see how it's codified there. And he says, V'im machro o nitano le'ino Yehudi, if he sold it or gave it to a non-Jew, and here it comes again, shemichutz labayit. It has to be that you transfer the physical possession of the chametz to outside of your house. So if you do that, he then goes on to say the part that we know. Afal pi shehayisrael mecharo le'ino Yehudi, even though the Jew sells it to a Gentile, v'yodea bo shelo yigabo klal, he knows that the Gentile is not going to touch it. Ela yishmerenu lo ad la'achar ha-Pesach. Instead, he's going to watch it till after Pesach. And not only that, v'yachzor v'yitnen alone, he's going to give it back to you after Pesach. Mutar, it's permitted. U'bilvad sheyitnenu lo matana gimura v'li shum tenai, so long as he gives it an outright gift, unconditionally, or he sells it to him for a cheap price. Okay? It happens to be, by the way, here he says, a gift on condition that you return, because in this case, that would mean that you have some ownership rights in the chametz. Okay? So we've made it to the 1500s, and in the 1500s, it seems obvious that there wasn't widespread sale of chametz. But there was a way, if you happen to own a, you know, valuable chametz, and you wanted it back after Pesach, and by the way, this already starts hinting at something. Because in the 1500s, you know, how much chametz was there that would still be fresh and edible 8 or 9 days later? Right? There's no processed chametz at that time. You know, presumably any chametz that you had wouldn't survive Pesach.
Alcohol.
Right. But there wasn't, you know, presumably there wasn't much in the way of whiskey in the 1500s, understanding. There may, you know, maybe there was beer. Certainly it didn't apply to wine. So the short answer is, let's assume you guys are right and there was some whiskey or beer. Okay. So if it was valuable enough, you took it, you put it in a box, you sold it to somebody, he carried it off someplace, or you brought it to him, and after Pesach, if he was nice, he'd bring it back to you, and you would either buy it back from him, or he would, you know, he would give it to you as a gift. But it was not, you know, it was kind of like a reluctant heter that some people took advantage of, okay? And that's where it stayed, you know, for, let's say, another 100 years, till you get into the 1600s. If you flip over on your sheet, go to the second side, I put in the biography of the Bach, just so people would know, because this is the turning point in the halacha, right? The Bach's name is Rabbi Yoel Sirkis. It's on the sheet. It's what comes to the first English part, okay? So he was born in 1561, and he died in Poland in 1640. He was the Posek Hador after the Rama, right? The Rama lived at the same time as the Shulchan Aruch, towards the late 1500s. The Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, the Bach, wrote a commentary. Okay? He was, you know, let's just assume he's the Gadol Hador. He's a Rav in Poland. He's the final word. And let's just assume we're now talking, you know, 1620. And now, as often happens when you trace the development of halacha, the facts change. Okay? What's now happening in Poland in the 1600s? The short answer is Jews are not only involved in, Jews are basically running the whiskey business. Beer and whiskey, which is thought of as being kind of like a dirty business, the Jews cornered the market on that. So the Bach now has, I say congregants, but he has people for whom, for the first time in history, it's not so simple to just, you know, take a box of something and carry it to your Gentile neighbor's house. These people have storehouses, or they have factories, they have distilleries, right? It's a major operation. And it's, you know, it's the community's money. It's a lot of money at stake. So here you have source number 6 in the Bach. In Simon Tuf Mem, that is the turning point in the development of the history of halacha, that you could point to one moment in time and one Simon in Shulchan Aruch, so to speak, but everybody acknowledges that this is the moment. And the Bach is very honest about it. Look at source number 6, and we'll see exactly how things develop without the halacha ever changing. Says the Bach, ובמדינה זו שרוב מסע ומתן הוא ביין שרף, says the Bach right away, very honestly. He says, where I live, most of Jewish commerce is based on whiskey. ואי אפשר להם למחרם לגוי מחוץ לבית. It's simply impractical to transfer physical possession of a distillery. Biprat, in particular, he says, "Lamachazikim beordina." Presumably, an ordina is what we have the word an ordinance. These people had government licenses. Okay, so you couldn't just move all your whiskey to somebody else's house; it was against the law. He says, "Yesh lehatir." This is the key line. He says, "I think you could permit it." Beinyan ze sheyimkor lagoy. Kol ha-chameit she-becheder, v'gam ha-cheder atzmo yimkor lagoy. Okay, first I'll just translate. He says, I think you can be matir this, we can permit this, on condition that you sell all of the chameits to the Gentile, and you sell him the room as well. So let's say you have a warehouse of whiskey. The Bach says, don't just sell the whiskey to the Gentile. That's not going to work. You have to sell him the whiskey plus the warehouse. Now, here's the magic in what the Bach did. The Bach did not change the halacha at all, right? The halacha, as we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, was you can if you physically transfer the chametz to a Gentile, you're allowed to sell it to him. So the Bach said just now, you know what we'll do? We'll physically transfer the chametz to the Gentile. Aye, but you're not actually giving it to him? But the answer is you are. Because if you sell him the warehouse, he is now in physical possession of the chametz and you are not. Clear to everybody? Right? Yep. This is the moment. It's so classic. The Bach didn't change the halacha. He just innovated in a way to make the pre-existing halacha apply to a new circumstance. Right? Originally, the halacha was, and it continues to be, you're not allowed to have physical possession of chametz on Pesach, because if you have physical possession, then the Gentile doesn't really own it. So says the Bach, well, we'll give the guy physical possession of the chametz. How will we do that? We'll do it because he's now the owner of the place where the chametz resides. Clear? Somebody nod. Okay, good. Yes. You're muted. I could see your mouth moving, but I can't hear you.
Joe, you've done mute. There you go.
Got it. But in other words, in reality, the guy can actually buy the entire warehouse. It's not me. Buy the entire warehouse with everything inside of it.
Yes. Yes. It's not so easy to get done, but you could do it. Now the Bach is going to be... So basically, we now have a precedent for what we do, but we'll see that it's still not like what we do. Watch what the Bach says going further. We're now in the second paragraph of 6. The Bach says, but it can't be a joke. He says, umihu, nevertheless, Sarich limsor legoy gam hamafteach. Mach says you can't pretend that you sold him the warehouse when he doesn't have access to it. He says you got to actually give him the key. De in lo kein, because if not, Kevan didat Yisrael lachzor v'liknot chametz ze'achar ha-Pesach, since it's absolutely the intention of the Jew to repurchase the warehouse after Pesach, have leikim maschir beitovik. Basically, what he says is it's a joke. Okay, so the Bach says as follows, that it can't be, you know, he's going to let you cheat, but it has to be, you know, the transfer has to be real. And the way I imagine it, and I don't know this for real, the way I imagine it, in the 1600s in Poland, if you had a warehouse, you know, there weren't 50 keys, right? You didn't just go to a locksmith and make a lot of keys. There was like one big key, and you gave it to him, and you lost access to the warehouse over Pesach, and now it's a real sale, because it's not just some kind of fake sale. This guy has access to the warehouse. He can go in and physically take the whiskey if he wants.
In theory, this guy could sell it to your competitor, or if they...
I just lost you, Bruce. If people could hear me, the answer is he could do absolutely anything he wants with the chametz. He absolutely owns it unconditionally. And he could do anything he wants with it.
And he being a poet.
Okay?
Drunk it.
Right. I guess your biggest fear is he drinks it all.
Well, we know about
him being a poet. I went to the Bach's Kever once before, it was a few weeks before Pesach, with one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, who made the point that if the Bach knew what we did with his heter, you know, he'd be rolling over in his grave right now. Okay, we did a lot with this, but let's finish the Bach just to see exactly how it plays out. Let's see. Okay. He says, if you go to the, basically the Bach says, without, I won't read it inside, he says, without the transfer of the key to the Gentile, there's no way the Gentile believes that he's the owner of the chametz. So the Bach says it's absolutely critical that as a substantive matter, the Gentile have access, you know, to that which you sold him. Because if he doesn't have access, you can't possibly pretend that it's a real sale. Okay? So just to recap, because this is critical. We started with the fact that before Pesach, you can sell chametz to a guy. Absolutely. That didn't help us because that's a real sale. Meaning that's like you own a supermarket, the guy comes in, buys chametz, he goes out, it's a real sale. That doesn't help us. We then saw a Tosefta that said, well, if you're stuck on a boat before Pesach and you're going to lose a lot of money and you give the chametz to a guy, even though the intention is that he gives it back to you, so long as you gave it to him outright and he doesn't have to give it back to you if he doesn't want to, that works. And you're not in violation of the Torah prohibition of Bal Yera'o Bal Yimatzeh. Okay? Again, that didn't help us because it involved physical transfer of the chametz. But at least it was on the books. And that's what was codified in Shulchan Aruch, and that's what existed until the 1600s. In the 1600s, you finally have Jews who are involved in the beer and the whiskey trade, and they simply can't carry their chametz to a Gentile. So you have this incredible innovation of the Bach, who says, wait, you could do physical transfer without physically transferring it. How? If you sell the chametz to the Gentile and you sell the physical plant, the warehouse as well, to a Gentile, and you give him a key so that he actually has access to it, so it's a real sale, says the Bach, that works. Questions?
Yeah. What happens? Is this a sale for a certain period of time, or is it
no? Sale? No, it's a forever sale.
So, in fact, that is a necessary component that it has to, in order to look real, that it has to be open-ended and not limited by the days of Pesach.
I think that that's right. I think that it has to be, in theory, an outright sale, right? Because let's say otherwise it's a rent. If you rent it out, right? If you sell a guy your house for a week, that's a rental. That's not a sale. And it means you still have an ownership interest in it over Pesach, and that's not going to work.
No, but during that period of time, though, you did not have that right. I don't have a right to go into a rental that, you know, if I own a piece of property and I rented it to somebody, I don't have a right to go in there and use the property during the rental.
Right. But if the prohibition of Baal Yerah or Baal Yimatzeh is having an ownership interest in Chametz, you have an ownership interest in the house, even though you rented it out. It's absolutely the case that you do. And I'm sure that in most rentals, there are situations in which, you know, you can have access to it. So it's not just access. It's the legal side of you're not allowed to have an ownership interest in a chametz. And let's say I know this to be true, just because we work backwards. The sales that we do, right, they're not sales that expire. We do outright sales nowadays. It's true that some of the conditions to the sale say things like, if you don't get the money by this date, you know, it transfers back. But for the most part, you want to do an outright sale. Okay.
Ellie?
So that's the,
Ellie?
Yeah. Yeah.
If I sell my neighbor my whiskey factory in Wuhan. I mean, he could go there. There's no key I'm giving him. It's far beyond anyone's ability to go and take anything. I'm just transferring him ownership of a factory that's far away. So,
well, who has access to the factory?
Well, in theory, he does. I sold it to him. But it's not like I'm giving him a key. I mean, I could give him a key, but that's, you know, if you really do sell someone property somewhere else, so okay, so if you want to go schlep there, he can. He knows he owned it. He signed a contract. He owns it now.
It's hard to answer the question because, you know, maybe something has taken the place of a key. I would say if you have a factory someplace and you sold it and now in the local Wuhan land registry, you know, your name no longer appears. And the name of, you know, Mr. Miyagi, who you sold it to, he's now the owner of the factory. That's probably the parallel to giving him the key.
Yes.
Okay. So you're right. It doesn't, you know, we may live in a world where it's not a key anymore. You know, there's a code to get in. And now he changes the code. But it's whatever gives him the actual right to entry and the thing that prohibits you.
Yes. Yes.
Finish at 10. Okay. Now, this is where the world sits. Again, it's not like such a worldwide phenomenon. It means in Poland, right? The Bach is matir people who own whiskey factories to sell their chametz. You know, by this legal fiction of selling the factory. But you're still not looking at, you know, a mass sale of chametz people have in their homes. They're not selling, you know, Oreo cookies. They're selling their factories. Now, what's the next big step in this process of the sale of chametz? So it happens 100 years later, maybe even 150 years later. Look at the next English, right? The Chassam Sofer. So I put in the English thing, right? Moses Sofer was born in Frankfurt am Main in Germany, right? Mr. Levy knew him well, in 1762.
Name at the time was Schreiber.
And he died in Morovia. Okay, good. I knew you knew him. In 1839. Okay, so he's now, let's assume now we're at the beginning of the 1800s. Okay, he is the Gadol Hador, the Posek Hador in the beginning of the 1800s. And the following bizarre thing happens. Again, you now have Jews selling chametz, but not really selling chametz. They're transferring physical possession. They're doing all the things you need to do under contract law, but they plan to get it back after chametz. And the following terrible thing happens. This, I think we've done this before. It's one of my favorite tshuvos. Look at source number 7. Says the Chassam Sofer, V'hine b'hiyot adayin hagon moreinu harav baruch frankel zatzal av bezdin t'kihila kidosha of Leipnik b'chayim He says, a while ago, when this Baruch Frankel was still alive and he was the Rav Rashi of Leipnik, Iram Ma'aseh, the following story happened. Shehilshinu Malshinim Eitzel Sareha Medina Demerin. Okay? Malshinim, from what we say in Davin, V'la Malshinim Al Tehi Sikva, it means Jewish informers. They told to the government of Merin, what did they tell? Sheyehudim mochrim chemtzam bishtarot, that Jews sell their valuable chametz by a contract, mibli shtempel. What's a shtempel?
It's a
stamp.
A seal.
Don't tell me, a seal. They don't use the seal of the Kira, which I think is the Kaiser. Okay? So what are they saying? The Jews are not paying taxes. There's a stamp tax, this VAT, that has to be paid when you sell. And they told on the government, they said, hey, these Jews are selling their chametz, but they're not paying taxes. Okay? That's fantastic. It's such a great thing. You know, if they're claiming that it's a real sale, then they should pay taxes, which obviously would have made, you know, increased the cost prohibitively. You know, if you had to pay 20% just to get rid of all your valuable chametz, and when you know you were going to buy it back after Pesach, so you have to pay another 20%. So now he says as follows in the third line: Ukisheba hadavar lifne hachasid the kira. The way I read this is something like when you read Shuvos, it's so great. When he calls the Kaiser the Chassid, you know it's going to be good, right? He's going to help us out. So he says, the Kaiser said, Hadavar Yadua. No, they don't have to pay taxes. It's well known. She'ein ze masa umatan shel tagar. It's not a real economic sale. Ela inyan dat religion. It's a religious sale. It's part of the ceremony. It's not a real sale. Al kein ein ze b'chiyuv shtempel. They don't have to pay the stamp tax because everybody knows it's just a game to get out of the iser bal yira bal yimatze. So this is fantastic, right? The Kaiser's telling us good news. You know, you don't have to worry about the stamp tax. What's the downside? The downside is the Kaiser doesn't think it's a real sale. And if the Kaiser doesn't think it's a real sale for which you have to pay stamp tax, then maybe it's not a real sale and we're over in Isser Daraisa. Right? It's fantastic. He tried to help us out, but in the end, he hurt us. So says, we're back in the tshuva, towards the end of the fourth line. Va'al yidei zeh says, nolad ktsat safek b'leva gaon zatzal. The previous rabbi got nervous. Demashma de bedina de malchusa pasul hashtar hahu. Because it sounds like the government doesn't recognize the sale. And if the government doesn't recognize the sale, then maybe it's not a sale. And says the Chasam Sofer, the end of that line, ulevavi lo kein yidmeh. I don't think so. I'm not worried. He says, ki hashtar kasher. The contract is enforceable. Hein bedin Yisrael. Even under halachic law, in ba hagoy lehotzi mikcho b'dayanim, harei hu shelo. If the Gentile tries to get hold of the property, he can do it. Hein bedinu mot ha'olam. It's also enforceable under German law. Ela she'az kisheyitvenu bedine umos ha'olam, I think, tzarich lishalem tchila hashtempel. The Chasam Sofer says, no, don't worry about it. All the Kaiser is saying is, listen, they're using the sale to get out of Bal Yira Bal Yimatze. But if the Gentile really took your factory, then of course you'd have to pay stamp tax, or he would have to pay stamp tax, right? It's just kind of deferred. It's like it's an optional sale, I suppose. But he says, it's a real sale. It's enforceable. If the guy said, I'm not giving it back to you after Pesach, says the Chasam Sofer, he'd have to pay stamp tax, and it would be enforceable. But, Acha Kaiser, b'chasto v'yashu noto, because he's such a tzaddik, this Kaiser, Amar she'al kiyotze b'zeh, lo hitil ol hashtempel, kevon she'ein tam hakone u'mocher l'derech tagarim. He says, right now, it's not a real sale in the business sense. Ela lahafkia me'isr chameitz. Va'al kazeh lo hitil ol mas hashtempel. And on this, he says, you don't have to pay a tax. Okay? So again, it's fantastic. We're in the 1800s, and the crisis is that the government is not demanding stamp tax on the sale of chametz, in which case the fear arises that if the government's not demanding stamp tax, maybe it's not a real sale. To which the Chassam Sefer says, no, they're just cutting us some slack and they're helping us out. Right? It's a fantastic
thing. They're helping us out. But the sale's never completed because the final price is paid at the end of Pesach. So therefore, it's a contract to sell, and you give them possession as let's say good faith, but you're not completing the sale, and therefore no tax is due.
Right. Meaning, it's an outright. The way I think about it, it's like a layaway plan or whatever. Right. The stores let you take it home with you, right? And you have to pay over time. There's no question. You know, you bought a flat screen. And you have to pay, 12 monthly payments of $100, okay? But the flat screen, you pay the first payment, and you take the TV home, and it's in your house. You absolutely own the TV, and you owe the money. It's true, presumably, that if at some point you don't pay the money, they could take the TV back.
No,
but it's yours until they take it back.
But that doesn't fit this case, because the completion of the sale is when you take it home, the very beginning. Here, the completion of the sale doesn't happen until the guy pays you the full amount.
It's like taking title to a house.
It's like what?
And then
right. Say it this way. I like to think that I own my house, even though the way you're saying it, the bank owns my house because I have a mortgage. So the answer is, says the Chassam Sofer, not to get stuck on this point too much, the Chassam Sofer says, no, they recognize it as a sale, it's true money still owed, and you wouldn't have to pay the stamp tax till the money is owed, but if after Pesach the guy keeps it, he'll have to pay a stamp tax. The main point remains the same. This Gentile, if he wants to keep your factory, is absolutely allowed by law to keep your factory, and you would have no recourse. And so long as you would have no recourse, it's an absolute sale. Okay. Let's see. Okay. The next question that came up, now source number 8, we won't read it inside, is the Divrei Chaim, the Tzanzer. This is probably already in the beginning of the 1900s, who has a big question. When you sell chametz, do you have to sell it under Gentile law, or is it sufficient to sell it under halacha? Right? So, for example, if you've ever gone to see the sale of chametz, which I have when I was a kid, and then again when my father-in-law, Zichron Levracha, was a rav, they make kinyanim. You have the guy, he picks up a handkerchief, he picks up a pen, is it kinyan chalipin, and you go, what does he know about it? That's not going to says, no, he thinks it's okay if it's enforceable under halacha, right? The whole question was do I write a contract in German? Do I write it in Hebrew? Do I write it in Yiddish? And basically what he says is that we would be best off, we have to make sure that the sale is enforceable in halacha. That's a kind of an interesting thing because what does it mean to have a halachic sale to a Gentile? Why is that meaningful to him? But that's how things develop. Now, what's not in any tshuvas, but what's so obvious is as follows. The world changes. You start having processed food, right? The way I think about it, my grandparents never sold chametz in their lives. You know why? Not because they were so frum, but they never had chametz to sell. Meaning, what did they have in the pantry if they had a pantry? They had bread and, not that much else. Nothing else. If you didn't have a refrigerator in your house, right, you didn't store that much. You didn't have a life where, you had this pantry and you had tons of pasta and processed foods and things that in bags and boxes, and they're sealed. It just didn't exist. And slowly, slowly, as times changed, people realized that they have stuff in their house. And, you know, maybe they need to get rid of it. And all of a sudden, you know, based on all the sources that we saw, there was kind of an explosion of demand. And this is certainly before my lifetime. When I was a kid, yeah, everybody sold their chametz. To the point that it seemed like it was like a mitzvah to sell your chametz, which was never the intent, right? It was never supposed to be that. And so all of a sudden we found ourselves in situations in which, you know, people are now selling their chametz on the internet through, you know, Chabad of Hawaii. And it's clearly formal in substance, because there are places where, you know, imagine we went from a place where the Gentile has access to your chametz, you give him the key, you know, to what we have now. And it's kind of a questionable thing. Clearly people rely on it, and you make a kinyan and you rely on it. But I'll tell you, like, I'm worried about it. I worry about it every year. And I think, and that it's hard to say it this year, because this year is different than any other year. We've forgotten, you know, for 55 minutes what we're going through, but it's not so easy. But in a normal year, I think, and we do this in my house, and I'm not bragging, I just, you know, we start getting rid of chametz after Pesach. We don't buy massive pasta. And here's where a chumrah has turned into a kula. Everybody has convinced us that everything you have in your pantry is chametz. And the answer is, it's completely not true. Your spices aren't chametz, and your kitmios aren't chametz, and your drinks aren't chametz. None of it is chametz. What's chametz? You have some cookies. You have pasta, right? How much bread do you keep over Pesach? So I'm here to tell you that, okay, if you have valuable liquor, there are ways to sell it. And there's ways to sell all our chametz. But if you watched how the chametz, how the law developed, it's much better, you know, to try to get rid of your chametz. And in the end, in America, I always thought this was funny. You know, people going to, like, you know, hotels in Phoenix that cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, but they're selling like $12 of pasta before they go. You know, just eat it. Just actually give it away. You know, like in America, at least, there are tons of jam. Put it in a box and give it away. The whole idea that, like, well, it's too hard to get rid of my chametz, that's a perfect example of the chumrah that turns into a kula. Because people are machmir that everything I have in my house that doesn't say kosher l'Pesach is chametz, so I have no choice. I have to sell everything. It's not true. If you go to your pantries now, you'll see you own very little real chametz. Kitnios, you're absolutely allowed to own on Pesach. You can use it if you're Ashkenazi, but you're absolutely allowed to own it. There's no reason to stupid to sell it. There's no reason to get rid of it. There's nothing wrong with it. If you look around the house, you don't have that much chametz. Okay? Again, unless you have valuable liquor. But short of that, you don't. And if you have valuable liquor, you know, you put it in one place. Maybe you can get a guy to have the key. I don't know. It's harder in Efrat. My children once asked me, and it's really fascinating. They said, if we sell our chametz, if we sell our chametz to a guy, or in this case, to an Arab, and he can't come into Efrat on Pesach, you know, does that work? It's an interesting question. It's hard to know the answer to that question. It's certainly not a question that the Chasam Sofer ever thought of. Okay? So all I'm saying is, the better point of this shir, because we have to stop, is not the halacha l'maisa. The better point is to see how we went from a tosefta that says a guy who's on a boat before Pesach and is stuck could transfer physical possession of his chametz to a Gentile guy on the boat to where we are now, which is, you know, we're doing these theoretical internet sales, and, you know, you don't even bother to put it all in the same place. You say, like, any chametz that I have in any cabinet in my house. My suggestion is, you know, if you do sell because you have no choice but to sell, is to take it seriously, to put it all in one place, the real chametz, to try to identify it as such, you know, everything we can. But in the end, It's not a mitzvah to sell chametz. Everybody knows that the Bach is the person who changed how we deal with chametz, and he didn't change it by changing halacha. All he did was say, there's more than one way to physically transfer possession of the chametz. It used to be that you had to pick it up and put it in another guy's house. Said the Bach, there's another way to do it. The way to do it is to sell your warehouse so that now it's as if he has physical possession. You will find that if we do this further, that in most situations in which it looks like the halacha changed, it didn't change. The facts changed in a way that now came out with a different result. But it's not like the Bach, it would be wrong. And if you hear anybody say the Bach changed the halacha with respect to the sale of chametz, it's not fair to the Bach and it's not historically accurate. The Bach innovated a way to allow the sale of chametz within the pre-existing halacha. And it worked. You know, an open question is, did we carry it too far? You know, with the Bach of Inhato? Thanks, everybody, very, very much. And we'll figure out if we do another share whenever Bruce wants. Okay? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. I'm happy to take your bottle when you want to give it away. I appreciate your seriousness. I'll take it, though.